Well, we're now embarking on a fascinating discussion here, which focuses, as you have perhaps seen on the program, on creativity, very important aspect of what we do or try to do, often fueled by imagination and very much tied up with identity, the sense of self that we were touching on in the previous component here. So we'll start off here with Shlomo Dubnov from the Department of Music, and I think we've got you up on the screen here, Shlomo.
So hello, everybody, and I'll be talking about narratives, storytelling. This is a work that is done as part of a research center on entertainment and learning, and our goal is kind of try to combine technology with the humanities in ways that actually allow some of the new results in machine learning, artificial intelligence, to be used for creating arts, but also for understanding how we create, and maybe something about our nature. So, you know, we enjoy patterns. So the title of the talk was Patterns of Tension Related to Storytelling or Narratives. I pose a question now, why is this appealing, why this is beautiful? There is something about this pattern that people find interesting. Mandalas, you know, patterns are also used in a lot of rituals and a lot of religious contexts. So what is it about this type of stimuli that might be appealing to people? Well, it's not only, you know, the beauty of patterns. It could be attraction to games. It could be a lot of things. And, you know, if we are in the medical school, so let's basically cut it up and try to see, can we understand what is aesthetics, what is fun, and what maybe drives us to engage into these creative activities? Because, you know, dealing with art in some sense is a paradox. You know, it doesn't have a real utility. We just do this because there is something in our brain that attracts us to do this. And then the question is what it is. And of course the danger is that, you know, like this little subject frog, it will die and it won't have much fun, but I hope we will. So I would say good point to start about thinking about aesthetics and beauty and narratives, which will come in a second, is a work by David Birkhoff, who was a physicist. But before he actually emerged on his discoveries in thermodynamics, he was also studying music and arts and literature, and he was trying to come up with measures of beauty. And what he claimed basically was this idea that we have sort of sensors that detect all kinds of symmetries, all kinds of features that make us actually sort of happy. So starting with these simple patterns, he would look into vertical equilibrium, you know, symmetries of form if it's rotation invariant. He defined all kinds of measures, speaking about poetry, and so on. So the basic idea is that there is something in the way we perceive the world that by trying to simplify patterns, we sort of detect some regularities, and this is driving us to try to understand this. So this understanding, in some sense, is really just an artistic drive. Speaking about patterns, now let's move to patterns in time. So being next to Hollywood, film is a time phenomena, and if anybody was ever interested in script writing, there are these Hollywood formulas that everybody is teaching if you go to these story expos or story seminars, and they actually tell you, well, there are certain ways to do things that actually work. So it has to be done in three acts. There is a beginning, there is a middle, there is an end, there is sort of a climax going on, and you actually have to preserve specific tempo. You have to, assuming a script should be 120 pages long because it's a minute per page, and you don't sell films which are more than an hour and a half, you have by page 20 to move to the second act, there needs to be climax, and so on. Very schematic, right? Doesn't make sense. Well, I mean, there's a whole industry built around it. So the question, can we measure narrative measurement, or is there such a thing as narrative measurement, is actually a good question. So, you know, there's this little controversial website called Terrible Minds. I would let you read some of the text. I'll just read the bold. So the question is, well, do we believe that there is a measurement of narrative? So yes, if you do measure it, because you don't have to, you should know that there is a certain structure. There are beats, there are scenes make sequences. So if you're building a house, you might want to know how house was built. So you might want to know how these things that sort of work, what are these principles? Now, they're empirical principles. In the arts, it's actually empirical science. You know, musicology, and if you take a textbook of harmony, it's nothing more than just encoding of empirical rules that people came up with. Storytelling also. So what is about this? Well, we can kind of go a little bit more elaborate into one of these beat sheets, so-called, Blake Snyder's beat sheet that has been celebrated recently. And it actually gives you all these little tools. It says, page 5, you have to have a theme stated. Okay, you have page 12, the catalyst, and page 25, you have to break into act 2. And there is this middle point, which is critical, and this is where you have either false victory, false defeat, and then you go down the road, and then there is this dark night of the soul, or everything is lost, before this new solution reemerges when you have this finale with the final image that kind of summarizes everything. Very schematic. You know, almost makes you mad thinking that, you know, this is, well, we cut up a scene. This frog is really just whatever it is, right? But you can go even beyond that. And one of the books that was inspiring a lot of scriptwriters is John Campbell's Monomyth, which is basically a compilation of mythologies into sort of a schema, where we go here from left to right, counterclockwise. So there is, again, three scenes. You have something that happens. There is a separation. Sorry about that. That's the next slide, which is the next myth. So it actually outlines certain elements that almost every religion, almost ideology, politics, the American myth, whatever, sort of observes. There is something happening. You move to another world, and you keep on going. So if you go and look at what we can do with this, well, we can actually use text analysis tools to investigate this. So if we take a matrix as a myth, we can actually use text analysis, and the computer can count words and actually create sort of a plot of how the story evolves. Now, these are sort of semantic tools that are used in any kind of text search. We can actually now try to trace the narrative over time, and it's interesting to see that this structure actually corresponds to a lot of these formulas. You have the middle point, you have the breaks, you have the themes. There are some peaks that we don't know, which actually correspond to some of these other peaks. And so we have all these visualization tools that exist that allow us to do this. So I would say what we have here. I mean, we have text analysis, we have musical analysis. I'll just skip a little bit to the modeling that we have. And the idea is that we can actually have formal models of communication that are being applied with ideas of surprise and ideas of reduction of uncertainty, which are actually based on the ideas of Birkhoff, that allow us to model these expectations in music and in text. And I think this is an area which is really fascinating, because in some sense there is so much empirical evidence and so many tools that actually allow us now to question ourselves what actually is a culture and what is our creativity about. Yeah, thank you.
Shlomo, thanks very much. We have time for perhaps one or two questions. Any hands up there in the back? Let me ask Shlomo a question about the interest that certainly we have as human beings in patterns of various kinds. Does one see that also in animals, in primates, of course, other primates, also perhaps some of the animals that we associate with, dogs and cats, and or is this a uniquely human process?
It's pushed to me. Okay. This is a great question. I think a lot of the way to understand this, at least in the short term, is based on reactions which are almost reflexes. So some of the musical theories that try to explain patterns of expectation actually claim that, you know, you have fleeing responses and freezing responses, and you can think about a lot of the tools that artists use to create tension and resolution, very analog to a little simple thing you do when you train your dog. You know, you grab a ball, and suddenly he's interested. He has your attention. Then you throw the ball, and he predicts where it goes, and he runs, and if he catches the ball, he's happy, or you can trick him. And you can actually, almost one-to-one, map the patterns of these little behaviors to tricks that artists use. Speaking on a larger scale of a myth, I think this is a uniquely human thing. So I think we believe in this more than the animal does. The reactions are the same.
Good, good.